The hailing frequencies are open because this is GHL Extra, and I'm Jason Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson, but you already knew that because you're beautiful, sexy people who support us here on Patreon. And we let a bunch of really talented people chat about X-Men the Animated Series, so now we're going to do it.
That's right. Eric Lewald and Julia Lewald, basically the showrunners.
Yeah.
I mean, she wasn't sure, but she's a showrunner. She was there all the time, as Eric said during the interview. They talked a lot about X-Men the Animated Series, but we thought we'd talk about some of our favorite episodes of X-Men the Animated Series. Of course, the series is all on Disney Plus. And, you know, I just really want to quickly bring up, Ashley, and this was also inspired by you and, you know, your love of Nightcrawler. But, like, I think the episode called Nightcrawler of X-Men the Animated Series, let me give you the exact number.
Season 3, episode 18.
How do you know that?
Because it's the best episode of X-Men the Animated Series.
What? But you think when Wolverine, Rogue, and Gambit go to Europe on a holiday and they cross paths with the character of Demonic Appearance that has been later abandoned, that is the best episode of X-Men the Animated Series?
I think any episode with Nightcrawler and it's the best episode.
I honestly don't remember if he appears again. He probably does.
He does, in very limited capacities. This is his big outing in X-Men the Animated Series, and even though I am not a religious person, and his religion is a really important part of this episode, to the point where at the end, like, he gets Logan to pray and we're supposed to be like happy that Logan has like found himself again. Mm-hmm. Even though that is not a theme that resonates with me, I think that one of the things that X-Men the Animated Series did really well is they did an excellent job at distilling who these characters are to their core in relation to the comic book canon. Like, they're pretty true adaptations of who the people on the panel are. Some other things about the characters are much broader because it's a cartoon.
And it's a kid's cartoon.
And it's for children, and they can't get into as much detail and stuff like that. But Nightcrawler is ultimately a character of faith, and I think they do a really good job at illustrating that that is what helped him get through the same things that everybody else is struggling with. I think it's a really sentimental episode, and I think for a kid's show, because of the story that it's based on, I think it does a really good job. It's a great episode.
They talk about, Eric Lewald talks about in his book previously on the X-Men a lot how a big reason of why they chose what character went into what episode was that they made sure that the plot or the story could only happen with said X-Men.
Yeah.
So they were like, he was like, we made very certain to make each of the X-Men very distinct because we had a big team. So he said that we were very intentional to be like, if this episode could be done by any other of the X-Men, we'd cut the story.
Yeah, they did a good job at that, I think.
Like, Wolverine story was the Wolverine story. The Nightcrawler story was the Nightcrawler story.
Yeah.
That's great. That's one of mine. I mean, I talked about this also in the GHL. One Man's Worth, part one, season 4, episode 1, and part 2, the episode that inspires Age of Apocalypse, is one of the best two-parters of this entire series.
I mean, so much so that regular Marvel Comics lifted it.
yes. And they talk about, again, if you listen to the regular episode, Eric mentioned in the episode that he said that they, because animation takes so long, that they had told Marvel about the premise. That's what inspired Marvel. And that by the time the show was starting to get designed on the animation side, they were able to see some of the early Age of Apocalypse designs, and they incorporated some of those into the episode.
Yeah, which is really, really cool.
But it's also crazy that it just shows you like the speed of a different medium, that Marvel was able to like get it out the door before their episode aired.
Not crazy, by the way.
Yes.
But also because comics takes a really dumb long time to make. So I think that shows you how long it takes animation to make, particularly in the 90s before we could just email stuff with Grady's. And Batman the Animated Series is very famous for doing that as well, because they lifted the entire character of Harley Quinn out into the main comics continuity. But I really like when you can see multiple mediums feeding each other, because it's a bit of an Ouroboros there, and you are going to have some crossover. But I think that that's the value in having adaptation.
I agree.
Is seeing like what works and what different types of storytellers can bring. I think the two-part adaptation of Days of Future Past is excellent. A lot of people think
that, a lot of changes to it, but that's fine.
A lot of people think that the first half is better than the second half. I think you'd be remiss to not consider them as a whole. There's also a lot of changes to the X-Men Days of Future Past movie, and I think that is a really good adaptation of, I think it's better than the original comic for a contemporary audience.
One of my favorite episodes is Old Soldiers. It's season 5, episode 11. It's the one with Captain America.
Yeah, it's also
the one where Captain America wears red Superman trunks.
Yeah.
Which is real weird. Sure.
Well, you know why? Because probably because Superman the Animated Series was around at the same time.
My favorite Wolverine is Wolverine Before the X-Men. Where he's got kind of gallivanting around the Marvel Universe and he's sort
Ronan
of
Wolverine.
Yeah, where he's like met everybody before they're everybody who they are. So like I love that James Howlett, and this is before James Howlett, of course, then the name was established.
Yeah.
But I really like this episode. And I remember at the time that this was like early inspiration. You can find a lot of these pictures, but Wizard Magazine had a lot of these. You can find these on the internet. There was a time where they started developing a Captain America series set in World War II, and they were going to jump it out of this episode.
I cannot believe that we have never had an animated series or a
of Captain
film
America.
Or a live action television show of Cap during that era.
But it's great. You can find, you can Google all these designs. Mm-hmm. It was Teenage Bucky. Mm-hmm. And it kind of looked like Batman animated series. And it was them in World War II. And they decided eventually against it because they thought it was going to be too violent. But all the designs I've ever seen for it, I was like, wow, that show, I think, would have been great.
I mean, that's a tough thing with comic book, with superhero adaptations, because they are predicated on punchy punchy.
Yes.
I love...
What other episodes of X-Men the Animated Series do you like?
The other one that I wanted to make sure that I shouted out is Repo Man, season 2, episode 5.
That's the Alpha Flight episode?
That's the Alpha Flight episode. It's also one of the only times that Weapon X ever gets mentioned.
Weapon X.
Because I believe Weapon X was being very deeply explored in the comic side of publication at the time. So people were like, oh, Weapon X! But I what I appreciate about it is that even though Alpha Flight could have been in the show as a name check,
it could have been a spinoff too.
They could have not in an, not from an American production company.
Oh, that's
it could
fair.
Not have been. They could have just been background characters. They could have showed up and done literally nothing. But like Vindicator in particular has a lot to do in this episode. And in the same way that I think they do a good job at distilling down who the X-Men are, even though there's a lot less source material to work with, it's really obvious if you've read the Alpha Flight stuff that was published before like 1992. It's really obvious that somebody on staff, whether I don't know if it was the showrunner's assistant or the writer's assistant or any of the writing, like I don't know who it was, but somebody on staff had done a good amount of reading on Alpha Flight. And I think that they do a good job of representing Canada in that episode. So
Really?
Yeah, I remember watching it
animated,
as a kid being
animated
like,
Canada is up to your snuff.
Yeah, I really liked it. Yeah,
I like that.
That was an episode that might shock you. They aired a lot where I came from. I've seen the episode of the X-Men animated series that I've seen the most.
The CBC is like, so Fox is like, we have 2 more seasons. Like, hey, we only want more episodes of Repo Man.
we're just gonna
run Repo Man because it's early. It's season 2.
I want to say it was probably YTV that aired it, but I honestly have no idea. I could literally look it up. Why don't
I have to give a mad shout out to I have 2 deep cut. Look, I don't think they're the best of episodes, but I love them because they were my first exposure to said characters. Till Death Do Us Part, Part 1 and Part 2 is the marriage of Cyclops and Jean Grey, but it's a big Mr. Sinister episode.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, and Jason loves him a Mr. Sinister, if you know what I mean. The other episode is, I think it's called, I'm looking it up. It's called Time Fugitives, Part 1 and Part 2, and that's a big Cable versus Bishop episode, and I'm all about Cable, and I'm all about Bishop, and I really dig it, although I don't know if the series does an amazing job with Cable, but because at the time very much Cable was still very Rob Liefeld, very one note, and they did their best and that's fine. But like, I think Cable may have been better served on that show if that show had been made later down the line. And you've got to see like where the comics took Cable and made him a real human being.
The internet has no idea.
Yeah. Also, one of my favorite X-Men episodes is this one too. Oh, it's not playing. This. You're killing me here, Roadcaster. I connected you and everything, and you ruined my joke.
Did you mute it?
No, it's okay. Gone. So, Ashley,
I'd love to ask you
a
question as we're sort of
I don't know if I'm gonna be able to fix this, but
getting through our list.
Keep asking me questions.
You mentioned earlier in the main episode that Jubilee Shin Lee and Marie, I don't remember what her last name is. I don't care about Rogue.
Marie.
I don't remember her last name is at all.
Marie.
That you thought that their best designs came out of this show and this era.
I think their best character. I think the best version of them comes out of the show, yes.
Are there any other characters that you think have really good designs in this series?
Well, I mean, when I talk about Jubilee and Rogue, I'm not specifically just talking about the art design. I'm talking about them as a character.
I understand.
And it's hard to me to think about designs because, like, a lot of their designs are just the X-Men Jim Lee designs, you know? So, like, that's no, because they come from the comic books. If you're talking about characters here, I will say that I think this is the show that made everybody not like Professor X.
That's how I feel about Cyclops.
That too.
Because this version, they definitely decided that their Cyclops is stick in the mud Cyclops.
He's a fuddy-duddy.
Yes. Gail Simone drags on Twitter all the time.
And that's not my Cyclops.
Yeah.
And I will admit
But I understand to put him in opposition to
Wolverine
and Gambit, why you would make him a little more stringent.
I also will say that I think this is a big reason why Wolverine is the main thing in all X-Men movies is this cartoon. 100%.
Interesting.
Because he is the lead character of this show. And he
Wolverine's
was kind of
the lead of everything always.
Yeah, but you got to realize that like late 80s, Wolverine popularity was just starting to go up.
Yeah.
Now, they did say in the interview, Eric and Julia, that they were told that they had to put Wolverine in it.
Mm-hmm.
But like everybody else, they'd kind of, and it's funny in the interview, they did say that when they Googled, they didn't Google because they didn't have Google at the time. But they said when they looked it up, they were told that 29 people had been the X-Men and they could choose from those 29 people. You know, but
I would love to know what that original list was.
It's just everybody that had been X-Men in the comic book so far.
So, there's no way there was only 29 X-Men by that point.
Well, you have to realize that was 1990.
Yeah, there's no way there was only 29 X-Men by that point.
I think 100%. It was the 90s where it was like everybody became an X-Men.
I still think there was more than 29.
You can thank Scott Lobdell for that. I think I disagree. I think it was 29. Because you got to think like the X-Men teams is like it's the first five basically until Len Wein comes along in 1977. Then it's Wolverine and the new team. And then it's team until the late 80s.
I just think of Uncanny X-Men as starting the explosion of the X-Men characters.
See, no, it's way later than that. It's way later than that because
they had a lot of supporting characters who didn't come back.
Yeah, but they weren't ever really X-Men characters. They were just like, I'm hanging out.
I can't think of this character's name.
Here, I'm going to look up the list.
The Storm has a love interest and he's good with machines. And
Forge. He was one of the 29.
Like, I was like, it was Forge ever an X-Man?
Mm-hmm. Yes, 100%.
Like, I'm thinking about characters like that.
All right, here you go. Now, this is according to Wikipedia. Do you want to just do a count off here?
Of all the characters who have ever been X-Men?
Let's see. I have them by years, too. Do you want to see when we get to 29?
Sure. Great. Okay. Yes. I'll count.
Cyclops.
Yep.
Iceman.
Yep.
Beast.
Yep.
Archangel.
Five. No, that's four.
That's four, actually. Marvel Girl.
Five.
Mimic.
Six.
Changeling.
Seven.
Polaris.
Eight.
Havoc.
Nine.
Okay. Nightcrawler.
10.
Wolverine.
11.
Banshee.
12.
Storm.
13.
Sunfire.
14.
Colossus.
15.
Thunderbird.
16.
Okay. Shadowcat.
17.
Rogue.
18.
This is the second Marvel Girl.
19.
Magneto.
20.
Longshot.
21.
Psylocke.
22.
Dazzler.
23.
Forge.
24.
Okay. What year do you think we were in?
Well, if we're at Forge, we're in the 80s.
We're in 1989.
Yeah, but you had Magneto was like three people ago.
He's on the list.
I know, but Magneto should be way earlier in the list.
Magneto didn't join the X-Men and become good until 1985. He's a villain before that.
I feel like they're being very stringent. This is the X-Men. Who they are defining as X-Men.
I'm just going to throw this out there. I don't know what you're remembering as X-Men history, but this tracks X-Men history with me, man. Like, this is exactly what I remember.
I guess I'm thinking everyone who's ever been in the mansion counts as X-Men.
No, it's official because I will tell you that I am. So they in this list, they put like Darwin on here, but that's 2006 retcon, which I'm like that he would not have been on the list that Eric and Julia got to see because he didn't exist.
Mm-hmm. I understand.
They also put, this list also puts Lockheed on here. Lockheed is not a member of the X-Men.
I mean, he technically is.
I'll give it to you. Okay, so there you get to add one to your number. Because I think you were at 22 or 23.
I was at 24.
So here's who I think was on the list. Okay. This is every character before the show premiered. Because there's only three more characters that aren't, because the show premieres in 92.
Yeah.
Gambit, Jubilee, Bishop. That's 92. Because every other character is 93 and later.
Mm.
Now, when we get to, when I'm looking at 21st century, holy God, it is a long list. And then 90,
well, yeah, because like after 2000, every mm-hmm. time somebody got an X-Men team, they just created 100 stupid kids with stupid faces.
Yeah.
Like there's a million kids with like a fish head and a bird mm-hmm. head, and there's a guy who's a tree.
But when you think about it, like the characters that we just named off, like that, yeah, that's probably the list they had.
I guess when I think of the X-Men, I always just think of like a splash page full of characters.
Yeah.
Well, so 29 seems like a low number to me.
Well, 29, when you think about it in terms of comics, that would be a lot of people on one page, though. It'd be a pretty packed splash page.
Yeah, I'm not disagreeing with mm-hmm. you on that. I just think 29 is a low number.
I mean, it seems pretty right on the number for me. Like, I mean, we counted it out. So, like, it's pretty... I mean, I there's no names that
I... Like, I wonder if by that time, like, how many people had been on the Justice League?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know. Well, that would be longer, right? Because it would be.
I understand.
The 1940s.
I understand. Yeah.
It's an interesting list. I don't know. Like I said, like there's no name that I'm like thinking of where I'm like, huh? Were they on the X-Men before 91? Probably not.
Well, you like Colossus should have been on that list.
He was on that list, love. Or was he not? He was. I said Colossus.
You must have said Storm because yep. Storm was on the team.
Mm-hmm. Because they're in the 19... So Nightcrawler, Wolverine, Banshee,
yeah, that's
Storm, Sunfire,
X-Men.
Colossus,
yeah.
and Thunderbird are all 1975.
Well...
And before that, it's the Five plus Mimic, Changeling, Polaris, and Havoc.
Yeah, but like when was New Mutants?
I mean, New Mutants, it happens in the 80s, but they are not X-Men. They're the New Mutants.
Okay.
Magic doesn't join the X-Men until the 2000s.
Okay.
That's the New Mutants aren't X-Men.
Okay.
Like Cable doesn't officially become an X-Men member until 2000 because he's with X-Force before then.
Sure. Okay.
Same with like Chamber. Same with Husk. Same with yeah, they count Magic's joining the X-Men in 2009.
Interesting.
So, and then let's see when she first showed up as Ileana and as a little girl in 1975 in Giant, but she doesn't appear as Magic until 1983.
I just think it's so interesting because it's this listing things out this way mm-hmm. is literally the opposite of the Bat family. If you've ever touched Bruce Wayne or like been flicked by
family.
Batman's cape, you are a Bat family member and you currently have 55 books with you right now at DC, and the X-Men are like, you don't get to play in our sandbox unless we explicitly give you a uniform.
Well, I guess maybe,
like I'd be like you didn't list like anyone from the Brotherhood, and I was like,
well yeah, because they weren't part of the X-Men. Quicksilver, by the way, has never been on an X-Men team until very recently.
You know, but I was like, well, I was like, I feel like you're leaving out like a huge cast of characters.
No, I don't think so. I mean, again, from all the X-Men comic books that I've read, that list seems pretty accurate. And like, it's to me, it's and I this is where I look at it is I look at it as Uncanny X-Men is the major league team. And mm-hmm. every other team is the minor league team.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't get to be called an X-Man. You don't get to be on Chuck Xavier. You don't get to call yourself an X-Man until you're on Chuck Xavier's team. You're
you,
on the major
Wolverine?
Leagues. What's that?
So what are you, Wolverine?
No.
Calling him Chuck?
Yeah, Chuck. Every other team is either not sanctioned or they're not considered good enough. Like Generation X is the trainee team. It's the kid team. New Mutants is the kid team. X-Force was a name that Cable gave his team that Charles Xavier didn't like. You know.
Hugh Jackman told the story about
Hugh Jackman.
The first X-Men movie.
Yeah.
There's a scene where he calls Professor X Chuck,
uh-huh.
and it tested so poorly that they cut it from the movie.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And I think about that a lot. I find it very funny for some reason.
Wow, audiences are stupid.
Yeah, or I guess they were like, this is so disrespectful. Wolverine would never. And you're like, wait, what?
All right. Now let's see if my favorite X-Men episode.
It's finally paired.
Right, here we go. Remember this?
Yeah. Geek and
Magneto. Did we know each other when I made this?
Yes.
Oh yeah?
Yes, Jason.
I'm uncertain. When did this come out? I'm looking for the time. Gambit's lips.
We were doing Geek History. We might have been doing Geek History when this came out.
September 20th, 2013. We were not doing Geek History.
No, but we knew each other. What's Wolverine say? Yeah, because I remember vividly you recording this and hearing it. And I remember.
I didn't record this at my apartment. Oh. I recorded this at a studio.
Well, but maybe I remember you editing it.
This took a long time to edit.
I also remember when Knott's Berry Farm fully ripped you off.
Yep.
And had. A much shittier version of this at their live show.
My favorite gag. So I made this with Matt Robb. He was a guy that helped me with this, helped me write this and helped me edit it. And we recorded it at and then Joel Martin did the music. And then we auto-tuned the crap out of it.
Joel Martin, who did the Geek History Lesson theme song.
He did do the Geek History Lesson theme song, but both versions.
Yeah.
You know, the new Geek History Lesson theme song, by the way, is just another section of the song that Joel Martin did from a long, long time
ago. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That I was like, you know what, I'm going to change it up. But I remember when Matt and I were writing this video, we were like, what's the ending? What's the ending? What's the ending? Because it's just stick, 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 stick. And you can find this video on my YouTube, of course, youtube.com/Jawan. And this was, I always, right from the very beginning, was like, it has to be him as Curly from Oklahoma. It has to be this hard cut. What's Wolverine say? Oh, what a beautiful morning. It was a pain in the ass to find this clip. I had to rip it off a CBS news site. I got a beautiful feeling. He's got a beautiful voice.
Yeah, he's amazing. Everything's going well. Multiple Tony Award winner.
Yeah, he's good.
Hugh Jackman. There's a very funny tweet that's been going around Twitter right now. And it's...
Not Tumblr? Not Reddit?
No, not Tumblr.
Not TikTok?
You couldn't pay me to be on Reddit, so I wouldn't know what's going on on Reddit.
Not Instagram?
Nope, it's going around on Twitter.
Not Flickster?
And
MySpace?
It's some dude at like Halloween or something, and he's obviously drunk, and he's in a Wolverine costume, and he's kind of dancing around.
Okay.
And the text part of it says, Hugh Jackman reprising his role as Wolverine in Deadpool 3 after doing musical theater for 10 years.
Okay.
And I was like... What fucking stupid person didn't know that he was doing musical theater before he ever played? Like, he didn't suddenly decide to go be a song and dance man. Like, yeah. That is who he's always been. I was like, do you know how many Tony Awards? Do you know how many times this man has hosted the Tony? Do your research.
One of the best things that I think Hugh Jackman has ever done is when he hosted the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
And
I agree. I can't believe that he just didn't become the host.
He's a multi-talented person.
Yep.
He's a triple threat.
Yeah.
And most actors are not.
Yeah.
He's a full triple threat. He's a triple threat from singing, acting, and dancing.
Dancing, yeah.
He hosted the Oscars, and he made it very much like his live action show, his stage show. He made it a musical number.
Yes.
And he danced.
The gag was that he built it all in his garage.
Yes. And then the greatest part that made me laugh, and I put it in the video, is that he ends the song
I
with
know exactly,
like,
sort of
like
yeah.
He's like, and you should listen to me because I'm Wolverine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, and you're like, man, that's a flex, dude.
Yeah, 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 for sure.
Like, you're hosting the Oscars, and then you're like, yeah, and almost more, also one of the most popular superheroes in the world.
Yeah, yeah. There's, I also think there's a reason why his performance as Wolverine, even though he has been in many bad movies as Wolverine, he is never the problem with those movies. But
no,
I think
not.
One of the reasons that he excels at playing a superhero is because he does come from musical theater, which is over the top. But also, to be a really good dancer, you have to have an awareness of your body it's on par with, and maybe better than being an athlete.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that translates. I think that's why Rebecca Romijn was a really good Mystique as well.
If you look at Hugh Jackman's Wolverine, I'm going to say a term that I know podcast listeners, get your minds out of the gutter. He's rigid.
Yes. Yay. Yes.
His Wolverine walks around like a man that has a skeleton full of steel.
Yeah. Like if you would run into him, you would he'd be a wall.
And
yeah.
He would because the adamantium.
Yeah.
But like his Wolverine, like does not move around light. Does not. And I think it's a very excellent observation you made, Ashley. I think
Thank
you're
you.
Right. Like I think that is from his dancer training.
Yeah.
He seems heavy. And that's the thing.
And that's a choice that he's made and maintained.
In the comic books, Wolverine's like 400 pounds. If Wolverine goes down, you're not body carrying him to the hospital.
You can't
pick him up.
I love, they do this in the comics and they've never really aped it.
Yeah.
They kind of ape it in one of the X-Men movies, but Wolverine's always getting tossed into the ocean and just like sinks right to the bottom.
And it's like
it's like thunk when he lands.
One of the best choices of the entirety of the X-Men movies is when they decided to do the metal on metal sound effects.
Yes, yeah.
And there's one of them in Days of Future Past when he hits the bottom, you hear the kunk. It sounds like a cement block hitting the bottom of the river.
Or I think about they did this with Kelly Hu's character with Lady Deathstrike when he fills her full of adamantium and she just like thunks to the bottom of the tank. Yeah. And you're thunk. Like, yeah, that's how it'd be.
Sound designers, man. The real winners behind the X-Men movies. And the animated.
And Wally, and I will die mad that they didn't win the Oscar for best sound design because Wally is only sound design.
Well, Ben Burtt is also, I think, won the Oscar for one of the Star Wars movies, so I think he's doing fine.
Yeah, but they gave it to The Dark Knight and they should have given it to Wally.
Why, you didn't like all the Joker?
No, I think wet mouth noises are one of the grossest things in the world, and I think anyone who likes ASMR has something wrong with them.
Hey, you want to know a fun fact about The Dark Knight? Specifically those mouth noises?
Sure.
Did you know that Heath Ledger does that because his lip makeup kept falling off?
No.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is him re-sticking it to his face.
Gross.
So that they don't have to break a take.
That's really gross.
Yeah. And they just liked it so much that they just were like, keep doing that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good actors, man.
Makeup.
They bring a lot.
Makeup artists, do your fucking job.
It's hard to do it around mouths because you can't use spirit gum because of the saliva.
I know. It is hard to do it around mouths.
That's why beards usually look really bad.
Rigid. Okay, everybody.
Turgid.
It's been a long episode of GHL Extra, but we had a good time. We
Intern
hope you liked
Brago again has not moved the entire time.
He looks dead.
Yeah, and his mouth is open.
He's fully upside down.
He's okay. Having a good snooze.
All right. Hey, Brago, what do you think about the sound design in the X-Men movies? No response. He is rigid. Okay.
He's not. He's the opposite.
Rigid. Anyways.
Let's put that on a t-shirt.
Rigid?
Yeah.
It's hard to do stuff around the mouth. Anyways.
Rigid colon. Hard to do stuff around the mouth.
Thank you, everybody, for listening. Thank you for your support. Hope you enjoyed this extra long episode of GHL Extra. I'm Jason Inman.
I'm Ashley Victoria Robinson.
She's a foxy nerd. Her shirt literally says foxy nerd. So.
It does. It's got a fox on it.
She's rigid. Anyways. Thanks for listening. Goodbye. Bye.
Bye.
Super friends.